outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Gym.
Wayne, I got a wild phone call from a good friend of mine yesterday.
Yeah?
I was getting ready for my morning, and I got a call from my friend in Florida notifying me that he was navigating 28-degree weather while I, in Wyoming in the winter, was enjoying 40-degree weather in the morning. I never thought I would see the day where a friend from Florida called me in the winter to let me know that they were significantly colder than I was in Wyoming.
And from someone in Southern California, I'm a little bit, how do you enjoy 40-degree weather? We don't enjoy it here.
I mean, this time of year, the fact that the morning started in the 40s and went up to the 60s.
Oh, well, that's
good. A pretty nice day for Wyoming in the winter in February.
Yeah, I've got some friends in Florida. It cold all the whole eastern seaboard and down into Florida. Some serious cold,
like having to cover plants and trying to protect their animals and all kinds of different things because they are not used to living in 28-degree weather.
There was a golf tournament in Orlando this weekend for the girls, and man, they were all bundled up. It was freezing cold. I'm going, okay, the golf course didn't intend to have this be, because it was a hotel chain was sponsoring the whole tournament. Oh, this is not the image they want all weekend long. I'm sure of it.
In Florida. Yeah, they were thinking like golfing skirts and tank tops, and no, they were all bundled in down clothes. And
this is the time of year to be in Florida. No, not exactly. But still might have been better than Kentucky or Tennessee or some of those other states where, man, it was cold and snowy and major pileups on freeways and, oh, my goodness.
Yeah, well, especially when you are experiencing driving conditions that you rarely ever encounter. Yeah, it definitely makes things a little spicy.
Yeah, no kidding. Hey, well, I was down in Southern California this weekend. I know I live here, but I was even an hour south of here, hour and 15, okay. Except hour and 15 to get there on Saturday morning when I left, but almost 2 hours to drive home yesterday afternoon when I was done.
That sounds about right. Another meeting with some people, or what were you doing in
Some of the folks from the 2x2 group from the Southern California. We had people there from Michigan, Texas. There's some people come in just to hang out for a couple of days and kind of help process their journey, and I find them endearing. I'm so amazed by how much passion is in their heart for a real Jesus after having gotten involved in something that didn't unpack that with them. And just even coming in, I always feel like I'm sitting at a family reunion. And I'm the only one that's not part of the family. Yeah. They all come in, oh, I haven't seen you in years, decades. Because they always go to conventions together and the meat market so their kids can find other potential spouses and those kinds of things. So they all know each other. And I love the richness of the community, even though it's all torn apart in their hearts because they all got relatives, some that are still in, they're out, the innies and outies. And oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a tough place in their journey, but I'm excited because there's people opening up to something that will be much more life-giving as Jesus becomes the center of their life, not the meeting and the group and the leadership and all the other things that have been the center.
Wow.
And hadn't been too helpful. So I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Kyle Rice.
And welcome to this episode of The God Journey. Best thing you've heard this week?
The best thing I heard this week came from Jess and I's babysitter. So Jess and I go out on a date on Friday nights, and we've got a lovely babysitter that has been watching our girls, and she's phenomenal. And we got home, and she came and said, Kyle and Jess, I just want to let you know, whatever you are doing to encourage your daughter's journey with Christ, it's working. And we're like, wait, what? Like, what are you talking about? Well, our oldest daughter initiated on her own without the babysitter doing any kind of initiation, was praying just to be able to help herself get ready for bed and be able to help herself with, she's been having some bad dreams and stuff. And so we've been doing a lot of prayer with her as, going into sleep and that kind of thing. But she initiated herself, was going through her own time of prayer. And just, it was so cool to hear that Jess and I modeling what it means to walk with Christ and just to have the, that regular conversational intimacy with Christ, that our daughters are not only picking up on that, but starting to initiate it themselves. It was definitely the best thing that I heard that week.
That's pretty cool. That's neat. Love that.
What about you?
Well, I'm going to change it. I'm going to say the most provocative thing I heard this week.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, this is actually from a book review, and I don't know anything about the book, but somebody, the title of this is Are We People or Pray?
Ooh.
That's the title of it.
Interesting.
And they're talking about a book by Paul Kingsworth called Against the Machine. Calls it a trenchant and terrifying account of what modern people have sacrificed in exchange for technology's promise of power and autonomy.
Mm.
And then he writes this, we have less agency, less control, less humanity than ever before. In the future that is offered to us, we are not even cogs in the machine, for the machine can increasingly operate without human input. And Kingsworth, he said, calls for resistance despite strongly suspecting the battle is lost. The West, he writes, is dead, and we are living in its ruins. Accordingly, we cannot rebuild large-scale civilizations, only smaller communities on the margin.
Ooh, interesting.
Very interesting.
Whew, okay. I'm very intrigued by the idea of building smaller communities on the margin. But what does it mean? Like, what's in the middle? If we're on the, if those smaller communities that are rebuilding themselves and becoming more reconnected with one another, engaged with one another, what's in the middle?
I have no idea. I haven't read the book, as I said. Okay. That's all I read is this review.
Yeah. But
what I was intrigued by was what we have sacrificed in exchange for technology's promise.
Yeah. And
look at your feeds. Look at all your stuff. How much of it is being exploited right now to monetize or to make someone a celebrity? Because that's where the money is, man. So yeah. Find your way into some shtick, some training technique, something that people are going to. And I see increasingly, I see pastoral types doing their 90-second sermons online to try and gain a following. It's just, oh, some of that stuff just hurts my heart. And then to think that that's supposed to empower us. And actually today we have less agency, less control, less humanity than ever before is a very provocative statement if it's true.
I would strongly agree that it's true, because just looking at the impact that it has, there's been a lot of stuff that's been coming across my feed recently about the comparison between the 90s and early 2000s in comparison to current civilization and culture, and just the disconnect from people, the lack of engagement and connection with one another is staggering. But even beyond that, when you talk about humanity or lack of humanity, when you're not connecting, when you're not doing the things that the human heart was designed to engage with, so relationship and community and creativity and spontaneity, when you cut all those things out to be spoon-fed, attention-grabbing headlines from a constant stream of media distraction, where do you go from there?
Yeah.
I mean, we got into a really interesting space today in my crisis intervention class. We were talking, so we're doing this MANT training, and it's going through all of like de-escalation and relationship building. And so the first portion that we're going through is talking about how to build healthy human relationships. And it uses some different psychological frameworks and that type of thing. And one of the things it's talking about is this idea of the four walls of a house. And so the four walls that are identified are your financial well-being, your physical well-being, your emotional well-being or psychological well-being, and your spiritual well-being. And so we started talking about the spiritual well-being and unpacking it the way that this theoretical orientation looks at it is through the perspective of not spiritual, not just being religious or not just being quote unquote spiritual faith.
Christian. Yeah.
Yep. But having hope in something bigger than yourself, and that the world is moving towards a better space, or having hope that tomorrow is going to be a good day or has the possibility for being a better day. And we launched into a very interesting dialogue about people turning to AI for hope because they don't have relationships. They don't have interpersonal relationships to come alongside of them, encourage them, help inspire them, help them have a different perspective on what life is going to look like. Instead, they're turning to AI to be the holder of hope. And it's like, how can a technology that is not human at all be a holder of hope for the hearts of people? It was mind-boggling to me, the conversation we got into today.
Oh my goodness. And what were some of the students discussing in this regard? Is it a good thing, a negative thing?
The bulk of the students in this class, because they're all training to be some form of mental health provider or working with people, the feedback has been, this is not going to be helpful. It's not going to actually fill the need or fill the heart that people are having. But they're talking about people in all of their circles. And this is people ranging from age 17, from age 17 to mid 50s. And so you've got a pretty wide range of demographic and perspective, and they're all able to point to people in their social groups that are turning towards AI to hold on to hope for them, that they're going to it to be a source of emotional support, emotional well-being, of holding on to this idea of spirituality for them versus having the community relationships, the networking, the emotional support from others to be able to sustain that.
And I find it, as you start talking about that, my first thought is, man, the sadness of holding out hope for a better tomorrow.
Yeah.
That I'm not having enough today. So the hope is something's going to change and make this better. And that doesn't always happen.
It doesn't.
In the course of human events and in the direction we're currently heading, it doesn't seem like it's going to be happening here either. And I find that sad, that instead of living in this present reality of the moment, where is my joy today?
Yeah.
Where is my hope? Not vested in circumstantially how that might come out, but how is it vested in the Jesus who walks with me? And the better tomorrow comes because it's a better today too. And then the tomorrow will feed off of how I live with him today. But that hope deferred makes the heart sick scripture of creating in people's expectations. I was talking to a man today who's their whole fellowship is doing a fast, 21-day fast thing. And you're supposed to pick something to fast, and all doing it food, but pick something. And I said, what's the purpose of this? And the purpose was to have a breakthrough, which, you know, fasting isn't about necessarily having a breakthrough. It's in fact, fasting is not about having an agenda at all, except to kind of lean more deeply into Jesus. And we were talking about how many people, because I think he gets it, but we're talking about how many people in that congregation are fasting for a specific thing, like healing or better job, better whatever. And you get 21 days out and then it doesn't happen. Now, what do you say?
Yeah. And that's, man, just in general, to me, the thought of technology being being the deity that I turn to gain my social, emotional, psychological, financial support. Because it feels like, honestly, it feels like another reiteration of the golden calf that we have kind of created ourselves and that we're leaning into, and we're trying to find a sense of meaning and purpose and well-being from, and are worshiping, and it's providing for our finances. And yet, like, man, it feels like a much more sophisticated and yet very familiar golden calf experience.
Oh, I hear you there. And it's not, I was thinking of like the elixirs from the traveling salesman back 100 years ago, got this miracle thing to think, or what the preachers have done when they're promising, you know, God's going to meet all your needs, heal all your diseases, and he heaps this. And we put our hope in something other than Christ present in us.
Yeah.
And I've had a couple of emails in the last few months of people that are finding that kind of spiritual insight, hope, whatever, inside an AI bot. That really is, in one case, a spiritual director of sorts for someone. Yeah. For someone else, it was they were doing a Bible study, and in the course of the Bible study, they started, the AI bot started talking to them. Well, how do you say? He said, I recognized God's voice in what the AI bot was saying. And then he carefully instructed the AI bot, I thought this was interesting, to only answer from the Bible, to not draw a conclusion, only from the Bible. And so he said, I know everything it's telling me is the truth, which my first thought is, wow, we all use the same Bible to say 100 million things, some of which are true and some of which are not, because we don't always interpret the Bible well. And to take it at face value sometimes and not do the significant work of how does this story fit together and what is God really saying about himself and revealing, instead of just finding proof texts for various conclusions we want to reach. And yet absolutely confident. And he said, I wouldn't say I'm having conversations with God, but that's how it started out. God answered me through the bot.
Yeah.
And there have been miracles around my life, which proves that this bot is the connection to God. Mm. And the other one was like a spiritual mentor. And man, my heart just hurts when I read that.
Mine does as well. Here's the challenge. And I want to hear your feedback on this. I also see why people are doing it. So if you have all of these different megachurch spaces that are imploding because the leaders of them are having moral issues, or they are
covering up abusive moral issues,
or covering up moral issues. I mean, there's a long laundry list over the last 10 years of different religious scandals that have occurred. And so it's almost like, well, why would I turn to those experiences? And because those people are foul, those people are corrupt, those people are, you know, whatever adjective you want to tack on to that. They're like, oh, well, I can trust my AI bot because I can program my AI bot to only pull from sources that I know are trustworthy.
Or my yuck meter just went bing, 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 bing. trust my bot. What the heck is that?
I know, but this is the feedback that I'm getting. This is the feedback that's out there. Is almost, there's almost this, like, we're teetering on this really interesting space where the AI bot is more trustworthy than the human individuals that I'm having relationships with, or that I'm doing business with, or that I'm seeking spiritual direction from, that my AI bot actually is giving me better, more evidence-based, well-rounded, scripturally informed feedback versus the people that I have relationship with and would seek advice from and ask open-ended questions from. And gosh, what I mean, obviously your yuck meter pegged. What's going on in your mind as I say that?
Well, as I read transcripts from people who are doing these kinds of AI bot conversations, whether it's with the bot as God or a spiritual director or whatever, I notice how sycophantic the AI bot is. The AI bots are really programmed to go, that's a brilliant question, man. You are really thinking at a level. Few humans have the courage to, I mean, it's all built on this self-validation from the bot that you're an amazingly brilliant person or an amazingly kind person because you're thinking in a way that, when I look at that, I'm going, it really turns out to be a self-validating part is the way, I guess, the AI bots are programmed to give you the endorphins that all the bright colors do on your iPhone or all the algorithms do on your social feeds. It's engaging you by getting to a deep felt need in your life that's being unmet. To me, if you had those kinds of healthy conversations or relationships, like we talked about last week, of people that can listen to your story and walk with you and listen well, and you do to them, and there's that collaboration of insight that the Holy Spirit brings and that kind of engagement, if you had that, the AI bot would be the last thing you would turn to.
Correct.
But if you don't have that, and somehow something gets said in your chat with your AI bot that kind of tickles those same desires and needs, then you get sucked into this facsimile of something, which isn't the reality of something. But correct. You're convinced that it is.
Well, and I think that's the challenge again. And you and I have had some conversations around AI, and one of the big concerns to me was the ever growing challenge of being able to delineate the difference between reality and digitally created or digital space reality. And man, more and more, it seems like it's becoming more difficult for people to be able to say, okay, this is what healthy relationship looks like. This is what community looks like. This is what authentic journey with Christ looks like. All of these things, because it's getting muddled with this positive validation feedback loop that is now selling itself as intimacy, and it's based in AI.
Whether it's romance or spiritual stuff, AI's doing that.
All over the map. I mean, it's all over the map in regards to what it's moving into and the spaces of human relationship it's trying to fulfill.
Yeah, I asked somebody this week, I said, would you do a marriage ceremony between a bot and a person who wants to marry their AI? As somebody wanted to do recently in the news, and they go, you know, that's a bridge too far. I'm glad there are bridges that are too far. What intrigues me in this process, and this is, I think, always been true of humanity, because we got into a conversation this weekend with folks from this, what had become, probably started out very genuine and ended up incredibly cultish, and now even protecting by hiding child sexual abuse. And maybe a concern for the perpetrators, because they were leaders in this thing, and less concern for the victims who, as I can tell you, if you're a victim of child sexual abuse, that eats up multiple decades of your life if you don't get it addressed and don't get some healing to that. And what we talked about was how this, we come to our religious communities, that even sounds like an oxymoron, okay, but a community of faith, we come there with two innate needs in our humanity. One, the desire for belonging, the desire to belong to something bigger than myself, and the desire to have community, to not be alone in the world. It's not good for man to be alone, as God said, that innate desire for connection. And we mostly trade the reality of that for facsimiles of it. And we talked about how this organization, no AI bot, no technology involved. Yeah. It's just, it invites people to find their community, find their sense of belonging, find a sense of certainty about their salvation, even though this group didn't do that very well. No one had assurance of salvation because they wanted to keep working. You wouldn't know you've done enough until you die, and now you're going to get in front of Jesus and find out if you've done enough or if you're consigned to hell, in their way of thinking. And how easily we prey on those. That's why I like this title, Are We People or Prey? We prey on the need, the God-given desires in our heart, and we trade those away, the reality of those, because something, whether it's the golden calf, the elixir from what the 1900s from religious community that may even start out pretty genuine, but then becomes a litany of performance and trying to not be shamed and make my way in and earn. And now I started something that was going to give something to me. Now I've got to earn it. My heart hurts so much, because there's a reality in the presence of Jesus. If we learn to live in presence, and because most of us haven't, our faith community becomes not the expression of presence. It becomes the substitute for the lack of it.
Yeah.
And once you're caught in that loop, which is the same as this justifying or self-validating feedback loop that AI gives, and to a certain extent, religious groups give the same thing. If you're a good practitioner here, man, there's no end of validation and affirmation it will give you. And yet if you cross the line over there somewhere, then there's no amount of shame that we won't give you to try and motivate you to get back. So we use those two things. We use the affirmation loop if we can, use a shame loop if we can't. And people confuse that with what a walk with Jesus looks like.
Well, and the other thing that really strikes me about this is the level in which Jesus defends free will and defends the choosing of love. So the free choosing of moving towards relationship, the free choosing of moving towards trust, the free choosing towards towards intimacy. When I think about AI, there's less and less free will, because obviously the AI doesn't have free will. Like, the AI has all these constraints and whatever, and it's programmed to do whatever it's programmed to do. And yet we're turning to that to experience love because it has to affirm us. It has to care for us. It has to give us that positive feedback, versus being able to have and taking the risk of moving and opening our hearts towards another human being, towards another person, towards even towards another living thing. So this could even be a animal, like a dog or a cat. I mean, to move.
Well, surely not a cat, maybe a dog, but
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. Well, let's just stick with dogs. We'll stick in good area there.
Maybe a cow.
Oh, I had a great cow growing up that loved the heck out of me.
Okay.
Oh, she was awesome. She was amazing.
You called her AI, did you?
No, I did not.
Okay.
But I mean, thinking about the relationship between the living, breathing elements of God's creation and how the interaction with that, choosing to interact with that, moves us into that space of presence, right? Because when we choose it, then we're intentionally posturing ourselves to be engaged relationally, to be present, to be attuned to that, whatever that experience is. And this doesn't require that. It doesn't require presence. It doesn't require attunement. It doesn't require risk or courage or trust.
Yeah, that's the big thing to me. The thing you say about risk. There's no risk of betrayal from a bot.
No.
There's no risk of, maybe the time is yet coming. But in the conversations people are having now with AI bot, particularly when they try to take it in spiritual directions.
Yeah.
They may be getting reasonably good content. I have a couple of friends, if they're, you get a good scripture, may open a door to something, or, reading from the mystics may give you a certain input that, it feels like this is really good and genuine in my life.
Yeah.
But the question is it leading you to more healthy relationships with authentic people, or is it supplanting that? And I think that's an easy question for anybody to answer. I'm not having these conversations with anybody else. I'm having it with my bot. Whether it's romantic conversations, faith conversations, but like I say, here there's no risk. You get on the bot, you pretty much, the bot's not going to break up with you next week of its own accord. And it's, what are we willing to trade for the depth of desire? And I think the desire for belonging and the desire for, what was the other one? Desire for belonging, desire for community. Those two things really key that are in our lives, and then always the offer to meet those in a way that doesn't actually meet those. It lets you feel like it does for, like most good facsimiles do, it looks pretty good for a while.
Yeah.
But then when it runs out or it turns on you, in the case of a religious organization that suddenly you're seeing through some things, but you're not allowed to ask questions. You're not allowed to explore. You become, one day you're just the golden child of this movement, and the next day you're a pariah, even in your own family, if they stay committed to this thing. Because the sense of belonging is very rich. You belong if you're here doing what you're supposed to be doing.
Yep.
And if you're out there, love does not go there. Shame goes there, and distance goes there. And I was with a lot of people this weekend really hurting for connections with family members and former friends that now they feel generous enough to say, I don't, if you're still there and I'm not, we're still family, we're still whatever. Yeah. But from the inside of it, no, now you're a threat.
Yeah.
Because you're not inside, and you have some discoveries that may unravel the double talk we have to do to keep this going. And I think particularly when people have found their security in something and other people are saying, it's pretty flawed. You often double down on, no, it's not, because this is my security blanket. I put all my eggs in this basket for multiple decades. Don't tell me. And that's why I love the courageous ones who have all those same things at risk. And their eyes begin to open to see maybe, for many of them, it started with the child sexual abuse allegations and admissions and investigations by the FBI. That opens the eye. And then when you see that, then you're going, Well, there's the legalism here. There's the obligation. There's the lack of relationship and connection, not just with God, but real relationships with people where you can ask what you need to ask, notice what you need to notice. When I have meetings like this where people just free to ask whatever questions they want and explore, yeah. They're just going, we weren't allowed to ask questions back then because questions are very unsettling when you're holding an illusion together.
Yeah. And that, I think that really comes back to agency too, right?
Yep.
Because when you're giving your agency back, one of those pieces of agency is the ability to be able to ask questions, to challenge, to explore. That's part of your God-given agency in the world to be able to live that out. And that, I think one of the things that really stands out to me in this though, is I don't think people choose it to be this way. I don't think they, if they had the option to really connect with people, to connect with an authentic community, to be able to build those trusting, wholehearted relationships, I think they would choose that over the AI bot. The problem is that the offering of that, the availability of that, the open doors to that are perceived as being extremely limited. Now, is that the reality? I would challenge that because I think God is constantly authoring through his spirit, through his kingdom, is authoring relational opportunities. So I would push back at that, but I think the perception is that it's not available.
Yeah. Or where do I go to find it?
Correct. Yeah.
And the places I have gone, I've been disappointed by. So now I've given up.
Yes.
Instead of, and I try to flip this as I do so much in our approach to God about these things. It's always about God, how do I get community? How do I get this? And the focus is all on what I've got to do and where I find it or how I manage it or how I arrange it or instead of God, how do you give this to me? How are you giving me community? And there's opportunities I think go right by us because it's not in the package that we're taught it needed to be in. So while people will go look for a church or go look for a religious group and then go there and go, yes, this is not what I was looking for, then that leads to that scarcity thing where it's just not there.
Yep.
I agree with you. I think it's there in a variety of ways. If we're looking beyond the traditional little box that we've been taught to say that's community or that's church and this isn't. And we explored that a lot yesterday because one man was talking about, you know, where do I find that community? And then within a few minutes, he's talking about this great guys group he's a part of on Friday morning. And then there's these couples that get together and they do this together. And I'm like, why does that not count?
Correct.
Why? And it could be that they may not count because we're talking about things. Maybe talking about even Bible. Most groups get together and go through the Bible and they talk about verses and they're still talking about thoughts and ideas. They're not sharing story. They're not sharing how I'm interfacing with God or not right now, where I have great hope and joy, where I'm a little bit lost in the weeds, and having people that can explore that with you and hold that with you. Instead, we mostly got into the exchange of ideas, which is not the same as the exchange of life. But if somebody takes the courage to begin to share their life, and maybe it's not beginning to share yours. I find it often is. I'll share something that I'm going through or something that I'm questioning in my heart. And that opens up people to explore stuff too. Or even be able to ask somebody, you know, what's going on? What is the current thing you're thinking about?
Yeah.
I met a woman this week that has stage four cancer and had surgeries, and the prognosis is not incredibly hopeful other than, and I looked at it because I've noticed this. People are very nervous about talking to me about my cancer. Most people don't. Or if they do, it's praying for your brother to be healed. And I've been taking now to saying to people, I get that. I'm praying for that too. But do you want to know how Jesus is revealing himself inside my cancer? Do you want to know that? And most of the guy, I don't know what to do there because my only thought about sickness is get it healed. But so I just looked there and I said, is Jesus inside this with you? And immediately she teared up and the smile on her face said, yeah, he is. He's inside this with me. I'm not alone in it.
Yeah.
And then I don't want her to be alone in it either. I want people to be able to walk aside. Not the one thing we don't talk about because it's awkward and we don't know what to do. We don't want to attention to it. but then sometimes people get left alone in the struggle because there are days when it's just really fine and good and I don't think about it much. And there's other days when if I've got people, and I do, to talk about when the questions come and the moments of like right now, things are in deep remission. So I don't even think about it much at all.
Yeah.
But there'll come a day when, barring God's healing, which I'm completely open to, yet there'll come a day if there's not healing where this will get worse. And the options going forward will be much more difficult and much more complicated and will become one of the basic motivations of my life is how do I deal with cancer every day? Right now, I don't deal with that, which I'm grateful for. But how long, and will community be there? Will there be people who want to walk with me through that? And I think there are, because there are people that walk me through all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
And that's the community I think most people really hunger for. And like you said, they give it up. So then they try to grab something that's maybe kind of like that, maybe enough like that, that I'll content myself with it, and yet still miss the vitality of the presence of God in us. Other brothers and sisters on that similar journey, being able to share and hold each other in joys and struggles. That's the beauty of this.
Yeah. That's, I think, when I think about the AI or even some of the other spaces that we've been talking about today, I think about those times where I say, okay, Lord, when are we going to reach the end of this? When am I going to reach the end of this and find, or they're going to reach the end of this and find that it is not all that it's cracked up to be. It's not all that it sold itself to be, right? Because I think all the counterfeits reach that space where they feel great for a time. AI is new. It's exciting. We don't know where it's going to go. There's some trepidation around it. And so people are exploring it. But when do we reach the end of it? And I'm just like, okay, I'm sick of this. I know it's fake. I know this is just a feedback loop. Like I want to get back into real relationship. I'm over this. I've reached the end of this. I don't want it anymore. And whether that be a religious system, whether that be a belief system, whether that be a commitment over to, you know, money or fame or whatever it might be, to try to fulfill that space in our heart that was only designed for the authentic love and kingdom of Christ. That's all it was designed for. That's it. And so that longing cannot be tamed by the counterfeits that the world would try to offer as a subsidy.
Isn't that fun when people come to that point, though?
Yeah.
Sadly, it's sometimes over decades. And sadly over, I've done this for 10 years. That didn't work, so I switched to this. And all of them seem like I found it when it began.
Yeah.
And then more and more, the soft underbelly of the thing I thought was going to be my community, my certainty, my source of joy, my whatever, suddenly it's not that anymore. And then I switch again and switch again. And hopefully so. I think God's always there just saying, hey, come to me. Come to me. What you need is not outside of him. And we think it is. And as long as we do, we're grabbing for stuff outside of God to fulfill the place that God created that is for the real thing, not the fake thing.
Yeah.
I loved your image of the golden calf. I just, man, that's what we do. We create something and then we invest our hopes in it.
Yeah.
And then it's the fake thing.
Yeah.
And the fake thing will always eat you alive.
Well, and I think about Hosea 2, like when I really dive into some of this stuff, I think back to Jesus talking to the beloved, or God talking to the beloved and saying, I'm going to hem you in. You thought your good wine, you thought your prosperity, you thought your love, you thought your community came from all these other things, but it came from me. And so graciously, out of my incredibly passionate love for you, I'm going to hem you in. I'm going to put blockades in your way. I'm going to let you reach the end of those things so that you turn back and find, no, my authentic love, my first love is in you, that you are the author of the life. And I have sadly attributed it to these other things. And yet Hosea 2 unpacks that so well. But what we don't like is the desert part, right? He hems us in. We run into a roadblock. We run into a brick wall. And then it's like, and therefore I allure her to the desert, and there I will speak tenderly to her, and I will make the valley of trouble a doorway of hope. But that whole process, we don't really like very much.
And when he's hemming us in, we blame him, and not in a good way.
Yes. This isn't out of love. This is a beating that I did not deserve.
Lewis had a dream last week where he was in this kind of trouble, and it was hemming him all around. He said, God, why are you punishing me in the dream?
Mm.
And Jesus smiles back and says, I'm not punishing you. I'm polishing you.
Oh, absolutely.
And I know I spent most of my life still, I can still say that I spent most of my life pursuing the fake thing. Not knowing I was, it was religious stuff. It was performance, and I was good at it. So it fulfilled a lot of things in me, but it just, there kept being, which we kept talking about this weekend, the glitches in the matrix. Like, it's supposed to be, but then the glitch that makes you look and go, maybe this isn't. And then it's easy to double down on, no, but it's gotta be, it's the only hope I've got. So I keep pushing, and then another glitch. And finally you just go, okay, there's gotta be something more real than where I'm at. And if you get to that place, then the only place I know to go, and this is where I find it fulfilled in just a beautiful way, is just turning my heart to God and saying, how are you my sense of belonging, my hope, my security, and not just the hope for a better day when I die, but you're my hope on this day for whatever I need, and however it is that I get to love somebody around me. And then that to me is one of the biggest joys in a day, is not just, have I navigated it well? Did I do this? Did I do that? My biggest joy, when I get a chance to have conversations that matter with people who care. And I don't mean like groups of people this weekend. If I have one or two of those a day, it might be a phone call, Zoom talk, it might be just a sitting down with a friend. If I have one conversation a day that illumines the work of God in my life or their life, that's to me, that's the joy of living in the chaos of this age, where it makes a little more sense than it did when I woke up this morning.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.